podcast with Dan and Scott. Hottest golf podcast, whether you like it or not. First one back in the day when that's a put at the park. 7 p.m. special where they played after dark. From the birdies to the focus to the losses and the win. Welcome podcast, patron to the show. Lead the pen, get busy golfing or get busy dying. Hottest golf podcast and I swear I ain't lying. Yeah. Leave the pen.
Podcast patrons, Leave the Pin Podcast is super stoked to have Gashouse Golf as their official clothing sponsor for the podcast. Go to gashousegolf.com, find them on all forms of social media at Gashouse Golf. Gashouse makes affordable, eye-catching, one-of-a-kind polos that help you stand out from the crowd. Why spend $75, $100, or even more on polos that make you look like everybody else when you can get one at an affordable price from Gashouse Golf? Hit the ball a mile and look damn good doing it.
Welcome back, podcast patrons, to another episode of Leave the Pin Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Dan. Today on the podcast, we have an old guest coming back. I believe one of the most insightful and honestly one of my most favorite golfers out there to speak to. World traveler, a guy that's been around, and a guy that I think has just a really good head on his shoulders, and that's Mr. Chris Hickman. Chris, what's going on, my man?
How's it going, man? Happy to be back on your podcast.
Yeah, I'm pumped. You know, the last episode that we did was we were both quarantining at the time. Yeah. So yeah. A little while ago, you know, and
yeah, like 2 years ago.
I still
crazy
get
times.
Yeah, you know, I still get feedback on it because we talked a lot about you being on PGA Tour China at the time, and you know, a dude coming from the East Coast played golf in Tennessee. You know, yeah, grew up in the Delmarva area. Yeah. Right. You know, people were like, it's just crazy how this kid made his way to, you know, PGA Tour China and back. So, you know, I figured that's not even stuff we'll hit on at all now. But, like, give us a little brief refresher. Where are we at? We still down in St. Simon's?
Yeah, we're still – I live a great life. You know, I play golf every day at Sea Island Golf Club and – you know, have a coach down here, work with Daniel Gray. And in 2020, I played the local IQ series events, which were, I guess, like, they were very expensive events run by the PGA Tour. And I think the winner of that series got one start on the PGA Tour. So, like, you know, you play like an 8-event series, 3-day events, stacked competition, and like the top one guy got one PGA Tour start. And
What's that running you like cost wise, if you don't mind me asking for that?
Oh, it's a fortune. Like, I mean, it's like $600, $700 entry fees, and you're just kind of like I don't know. A lot of the guys felt like it was a slap in the face. We were kind of like, wow, like, you know, because our tours got canceled. Like Canada got canceled that year.
Right.
Latin America got canceled. I was 61st on the China money list, which got me some starts for the next year, and didn't get any, you know, that tour was canceled. And then I got starts in the local IQ series, but there wasn't like any, you know, thing on that tour where, you know, if you like played well, like finished top 25 on that money list, you could have, I don't know, go on the final stage in Korn Ferry Tour Q School. There was nothing like that. So
there's no room for movement. There was no advancement through that.
Basically not. And like the guy who won that money list was Bryson Nimmer, and he won 2 events and he beat like 140 player fields. I mean, this guy was studding out and like, I mean, won 2 of them, like, you know, shooting way under par on hard, on good tracks. And he got one PGA Tour start, and I think he emceed, and like, I don't know if he emceed or he finished 50th, but then I was like, all right, like, good job for winning the Look Like You series.
Yeah, so, you get a pat on the back, and they send you on your way.
Yeah, they're like, all right, good job. And I think the winner of those events got like 16 grand. So it was really, that was really a rough tour to be on. And I was going through changing coaches at the time. I had worked with this one guy for a while, and then I started working with this guy, Daniel Gray, in early 2021. And I really started playing way better. My grip was super strong, like just had this outrageously strong grip and really swayed off the golf ball. And it was just a really good recipe for like complete like, you know, just no face stability whatsoever, like through the hitting area.
Right. So like when it went wrong, it really went wrong.
It wasn't, yeah, like it wasn't like when I like missed a drive. It was like, oh, like right rough or left rough. It was like out of bounds.
Right, so, like, right.
You know, and you just can't play golf like that. And so I started working with this guy. Weakened my grip. I won a Swing Thought Tour event in 2021, qualified for the sectionals of the US Open, and then fractured my arm on a skateboard. Like the stupidest thing I've ever done in my life. Just fractured my elbow, radial head fracture, and had to take like 3 months off. And then I came back and my elbow doesn't quite extend the same way as it used to as my lead arm. I'm left-handed, so I fractured my right elbow. And that was really like shitty. That was like the worst thing ever. And it took me,
are you a skater by nature?
Yeah, dude, I grew up skateboarding. I wanted to be like Tony Hawk. Like I can even now, like I can board slide on rails and kick flip and heel flip. And,
sick, dude. That's sick because you don't get, you know, like, honestly, like, let's be honest, like most pro golfers out there, right, are just boring as hell dudes. Like they are boring. Right,
they're so bland.
They're media trained. They won't give you anything. It sucks you hurt yourself, but like I can so appreciate someone sticking like so true to who they are.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that because I was having a great time when I did it, and I was riding around on the skateboard, and I tried to hop up on this ledge that was like literally a foot off the ground. I mean, I wasn't going on vert ramps. So I was like, oh, I'll just screw around on my skateboard and it'll be a nice, you know, evening. Like, I skated for 8 years as a kid. And I mean, I was really into it. And to fracture my elbow was like, it was so like perplexing because I was like, man, I really was enjoying myself. But man, that was fucking stupid. Like, I can't believe I'm a pro golfer now. I'm not a skateboarder. You know, I can't be like, you know.
Yeah.
I can't be like out there doing something that's going to maybe risk breaking a joint. Or I mean, I didn't realize like all the complications with like fracturing a joint. Like, you know, it really, you know, I can't do push-ups now. I can't lift weights the certain way I used to. The joint itself in my elbow isn't like as strong as it used to be. So I really like thought, oh, you know, if I go skateboarding, like, you know, worst that'll happen, you know, maybe I might, you know, sprain an ankle, but that, you know, that's a week and you're right back to it. And like, you know, it was like July, there was nothing but mini tour events in 2021. There wasn't really a tour to play on. There wasn't anything going on. Like DP World Tour had no Q School, Asian Tour had no Q School. There was only Corn Ferry Tour Q School. I was just kind of having fun and, yeah, I fractured it, and it was a huge problem because when I came back from fracturing my elbow, everything that was working prior to fracturing my elbow stopped working. everything I had worked on wasn't working as well, like, to the same degree when I got to the final stage of the U.S. Open qualifier and winning that Swing Thought Tour event, and it was really it really sucked. I mean, I played a Latin America Q School 3 months later in October and made it through, got conditional status, but I hit it horrible. I don't know how I got through that, but I got such junky status.
Did you have to change your swing up at all because of not being able to extend, or were you able to like eventually work your way back to what your swing was?
Yeah, so this is getting nitty gritty, but basically it's when your elbow is a little bit bent, it shortens the and I swing with a bent arm anyway, so I get to the top of my swing and my lead arm bends coming through the kind of like Lee Westwood, and I fractured that arm and it's not straight, so it's even more bent now. And when it's more bent, basically, long story short, it can make your swing more steep because, like, let's say, like I told you to swing a golf club, bring it to the top of the swing and then take it down and extend your arm as much as possible, that really gets the club away from you and makes the angle of attack very shallow. And if I bent your arm and, you know, maybe 45 degrees and then made you bring it down, that club will be coming way more steep into the golf ball. And you might hit like chunky, toey shots. And so that's kind of what I experienced when I came back. I was hitting these like toey, chunky shots. And it took me like almost 7-8 months until very recently to where I started really playing way better. I got Canadian Tour status this year in May, played 5 events, and was still struggling then with like just figuring out my game, you know, post arm fracture. And that,
so yeah, you have PGA Tour, you have Canada and Latino America status?
Yeah, so I had Canada and Latino America status, and unfortunately did not move the needle or progress in my career too much with that, but it was nice to, you know, play in those events. I was going to do Korn Ferry Tour Q School this year, but I ended up deciding not to do it because I just feel like I feel like it's very competitive, it's very expensive, and I ended up doing the DP World Tour Q School. I was like inside the number. I went to Denmark for that. So basically all summer long I struggled on the Canadian Tour. The big thing that I lost when I fractured my elbow was being able to hit my driver straight. And
okay,
I was literally on the golf course just hitting it crooked. Like you just can't play. Tiger Woods said this in an interview that day. He said, your driver is the most important club in your bag. And I would agree. I would have to agree. Huh?
I would agree. You know, a lot of the amateurs say, well, no, it's definitely the putter. But if you look at stats for top tier amateurs and pros, most strokes gained on the course are off the tee.
For sure. Dude, you're 100% right. And approach. Have you ever read that book, Thing Every Shot Counts by Mark Brody?
I know, but I someone else that I had on the podcast, and I can't recall who, referenced that book as well. I know what you're talking about.
I would definitely like check it out because this guy invented the strokes gain stats. And like, I mean, this guy is a numbers wizard. And he was basically like, if you look at like, you know, players like all throughout the board, like, you know, you have a guy with a bad long game, but a great short game. You have a guy with a great long game, an approach game, and a mediocre short game. Like, you really want to be good like in the long game. Like, you really want to be good with like your approach shots outside of 100 yards and like your driving, because it's just really hard to play golf when you're hitting your driver like short and crooked. That would be like the worst way to drive it. And if you're hitting it 285 or 290 or 300 and straight, you know, the game gets very simple from there. It's like, all right, like, like, man, it's not very hard to play golf from there. But here in the woods or something, it's really, you know, it's tough. I mean, a good analogy of this. So I was just telling you before we hopped on the call, I went to my college teammate was Morong, and Adrian Morong. He won the Australian Open and the Irish Open this year. And he also got invited to the Masters. He's a really good player. You know, when I went to school, I had a great short game, but a mediocre long game. Like, I was really, really good around the greens, really good at putting, really good at just get up and down from everywhere, and just could not hit a 4-iron on the green from 210 to save my life. And Maronk, he was an extremely talented long game player. Like, he could hit a 5-iron on the green from 215, 210, like it's nobody's business. He could drive it down the middle, whatever, like no problem. And if you look at the trajectory of how our careers have panned out, you know, I'm still trying to make it, and he's getting invited to the Masters. And if you look at the stats on the European Tour, he's second in strokes gained off the tee. He's like top 10 in approach. And he's just killing people with his long game. I mean, these guys who are really, really the top players, they're kind of like these Adrian Morong type players where they hit the ball a long way down there, give themselves lots of birdie opportunities. And yeah, the days they just happen to putt well is the days they take it low. And they don't shoot, you know, their bad day's not six over par or something. Like, it's still
right.
Really good, really good golf. So I think the long game, this is something I really learned this year, is just how important ball striking is. Like, you know, putting is kind of important, but putting's kind of random. You know, like you have
that's
some
like
days...
that's like the whole it's like the John Rahm conundrum, right? Like, one of the greatest off the tee, one of the greatest with the long irons, and any time that he putts well, he's probably going to be top five. And, sure. You know, when he doesn't putt well, yeah, he'll be top 30 just because he's that good. But any putting week that he has that's even, like, slightly above mediocre, like, he's in it. You know, he's a contender.
For sure. For sure. I mean, that's just ball striking because, like, I think, like, ball striking, like, it really, like, let's say you go out like John Rahm and you stripe it around and you hit 16 greens and you hit it inside 20 feet all the time and you got all these looks. Like, his potential for a great round is really high. Like, he could shoot potentially 9 under par or 10 under if he gets it rolling. But let's say you take a guy who's an average ball striker, you know, he hits maybe a ball out of bounds and, you know, hits maybe 10 or 11 greens that day. I mean, his ceiling is so much lower than John Rahm's. Like, he can only shoot maybe at best 3 or 4 under, getting up and down the other 7 times. Yeah. And, like, he's got to really capitalize on those putts that he has for birdie. And he's having a lot more par putts. I mean, you're not going to chip it to 3 feet every time. Like, you got to make those 8-footers for par. So it's just, it really, like, makes golf, like, so much easier when you can ball strike it. Now, I'm not saying, like, short game isn't important. Like, you need to be decent at short game. You need to be decent at putting. But ball striking is where it's at. Like, you're right when you're saying about off the tee. Like,
yeah, sure. you need – I mean, that was a great point. You need to give yourself looks. Like, you know, to rational it down to the normal amateur player, you know, we were talking about my son's a pretty decent golfer and, you know, he's starting to beat me with a lot more regularity. I'm not a big fan of that, but he's also much longer and much straighter off the tee.
Yeah,
so, like,
exactly.
If I pound one, you know, I'm putting it like 255, maybe 265. When he pounds one, it's 320.
Right.
So,
yeah, exactly.
You just extrapolate that and, like, okay. He hits his drive that distance. Well, guess what? Our pitching wedges aren't the same distance either. You know, like, his pitching wedge is from 150. Mine's from like 105. So you give yourself these opportunities to make birdie. And yeah, I mean, the great point, like, the ceiling for players like that are long off the tee is just infinite. And the ceiling for players like me, I've got to make like every putt in a round in order to be 1 or 2 over par.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you need to, like, totally ball out. And, like,
yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like if I just – let's say, like, I could just put you on a golf course and be like, okay, I'm going to give you – let's – like, I could just drop a golf ball, like, around the green or on the green, and we'll say, okay, this is your approach into the green. And I put it, like, 20 to 30 to 10 feet 15 times, and I put it maybe in the rough or – you know, on the fringe or something another 3 times and say, all right, like, let's see what your score is, you know, like, relative to where I've dropped these balls.
Yeah.
On the green, and you'd probably shoot somewhere around par. And if you really putted well, you might shoot a couple under. And if you putted amazing, you know, and got up and down those other 3 times, you shoot way under par. And that's just what these elite golfers are doing all the time. Is like, you know, Morikawa, you know, he's like number one in strokes gained approach. You look at, or the, at least in 2021 when he won the Open, or I think, or yeah, and, or 2022. Well, was it 2021 or 2022? I'm not sure.
21, because remember, 22, he started hitting these like draws out of nowhere when he was, yeah. when he was yeah, a fade player. It didn't work out too well for him. I got to go back to the drawing board.
Yeah. But yeah, if you look at like all the top guys, they're it's just ball striking. I mean, it's just, and like the elite, like Rory and, I mean, Adrian, my teammate, he bombs it. He 6'6", murks it out there, and it's like, you know, it's tough to compete with these guys if you're not really an elite ball striker. Like a lot of these guys say, oh, like putting is so important, or putting is like the heart of the game, or like, I love my sports. I, you know, worked with Bob Rotella for 8 years, like love him to death. He's a great guy, but he has a book called, he says a few times like, oh, like putting is the heart of the game. And I kind of disagree. I kind of think that ball striking is the heart of the game. And like, if you could just be like an average putter, I think Rory said like in 2012, he's like, yeah, you know, like you don't even really need to be that great of a putter or a short game player. He's like, you just need to like, I mean, you can't be sculling chips across the green or like getting up and down 30% of the time. Like, you gotta have a decent short game.
Right.
But it's, you can't, you need to be getting up and down a lot, and you need to be, you can't be duffing your chips or whatever. But yeah, it's can't stress that point enough, like how important just tee to green play is. So, and I think, like you said, if you look at differences in golf tournaments, you know, like Will Zalatoris, and you look at these other players, like the biggest difference in like stats, like between the guys who win that week and the guys who play poorly, is usually strokes gained tee to green. So you'll look at like Will Zalatoris, it's like, okay, he was gaining 6 shots off the tee and to the green this week. And the guy who is like, you know, in last place, he's like losing 3 shots or losing 4 shots. So it's like a 10 shot differential. And if you look at maybe differences in strokes gained, like short game or something, it's like maybe 1 or 2 shots. Like, it's really not like this big indicator. And obviously putting matters too. Like, it's hard to go out and shoot 9 under without putting, but
yeah. Yeah. Without making some. Yeah. Hey, I want to talk a little bit. You down in St. Simon's and stuff. What's that St. Simon's life like, and how did you end up with like such an amazing area of the country as your home base?
Well, I definitely, got, well, in college, my coach, I was like a really bad, like, freshman and sophomore in college. Like, I was out there shooting 80 all the time, and I was working with the coach at this college named Fred Warren, and I had no idea like what I was doing. And like, I had a great short game, but like ball striking wise was horrible. And I said, and I was working with him, and he wasn't helping me at all. And I was like, hey, like, is there a place where, you know, that I could you know, find a coach? Like, I was like in East Tennessee. I was working with the college coach, and he didn't really know anything about the swing. And I was like, you know, can you just point me in the direction of a place where they have elite coaches? And he said, go to St. Simon's Island, go to Sea Island. He's like, Sea Island Golf Performance Center. They've got a lot of instructors there. I came down here when I was 20, worked with one of the instructors, and had a great year when I was 20, amateur wise, won Eastern Am, won Delaware Open, Delaware Am. And he really helped me out. His name was Jared Zach. And then I liked it so much down here after college, I could have moved back home to Maryland, but I figured that if I'm actually going to have a chance of competing with like elite golfers, I need to be in a serious, you know, facility, and
right,
need to be around, you know, elite coaches. And so I moved down here and I started working with Todd Anderson. He's a great coach, great guy. Love, you know, nothing bad to say about Todd Anderson. And he really, really helped me understand a few key things about the golf swing and helped me start hitting it better. And When I first moved down here, it wasn't like that hard to originally move down here. Like there's so to be a member at Sea Island Golf Club's like $140,000 down payment, but they have like
I know it's crazy.
It's insane. It's like the Floridian or something. And but they have a program for like, you know, like aspiring pro golfers, or it's called like Access Member, where you pay like I think like $1,000 a month and you get to use the facilities, and it's expensive, but you get 3 golf courses, you get super nice driving range and everything. And I was like, you know, felt like it was worth it and an investment in to my career and my future. And yeah, it, but now there's like a wait list. Like now you just can't like the secret's out. Like you can't just waltz into St. Simon's and say, hey, I want to be on the Access Member list. There's like a wait list. And I've been down here for, it's been my 7th year. And, you know, I love it.
So is it pretty easy to get a game with other, you know, other tour pros or the top tier amateurs while you're down there? Is that like, that's like a daily occurrence, I take it?
Yeah, for sure. Like if I wanted to play a game with like, you know, if I was really looking for a game, I could definitely go out and find it. There's always someone who wants to play. So it's a super good, there's like, I think 15 or like 14 guys down here, like, you know, Davis Thompson, like Patton Kizzire, Keith Mitchell, Harris English, Michael Thompson, Brian Harman, just loads of professionals and, you know, mini tour guys, or, you know, Ben Griffin, he just got on PGA Tour. He was a member down here for a while. Like, you can always find a game, like, with people to go compete. And I think that's, like, important, because you can go out and play by yourself, which is sometimes what I do. But, it's like, you know, playing for $100 or $10 in a competitive match is much more like actual.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like competitive golf, like going out and playing for nothing is really not like anything like playing tournament golf. Like, I mean, it is like you're hitting the shots and you're going through the motions, but you don't have that like anxiety a little bit.
So, now, are those guys pretty approachable, or are they kind of guarded? Like, what's that tour pro mindset like down there? Like, are guys willing to help, or are guys, you know, holding everything close to the vest because they don't want to give away any of their guarded secrets that they think, you know, might take their spot away from them?
You definitely have a few guys down here that are really guarded and kind of stiff. Like, yeah. And just like you said a little while ago, like boring, you know, some like boring golfers. Like, you definitely have some people like that, you know. But there's a few characters down here. Austin Morrison, I play with him sometimes. And there's like the tour pros, like they're pretty approachable. Like you can talk to them, ask them for advice on your swing. And like Patton's really nice. Harris English is really nice. Hudson Swafford's really nice. Like you can pretty much go, like, you know, they're not sitting there like, oh, like I'm not going to, you know, help this guy because I don't want him to get on the tour and, you know, take my spot or something, you know. Like, oh, like, I got to make sure this guy stays crappy at golf, or I'm not going to help him out. So.
So what's a day in the life look like for you down there? Like, what's your practice routine look like? You know, are you getting into money games during the week? Are people asking you? Are you, you know, yeah, are there like, both mini tours down there?
Yeah, we have there's a guy down here named Garrett who kind of puts together these like little money games where like 15 of us or 12 of us will get together. You pay $200 and we'll all go out and compete for 3 days in a row and or 2 days in a row and see who can win. And that's really good for, because these mini tour events, like, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, say anything that negative about mini tour events.
Look, man, there's a lot of charlatans out there. Everybody knows that, man.
Dude, mini tours are brutal because you travel a long way. It's like $800 entry fee. It's like a couple hundred dollars for the hotel. And you pretty much have to top five it just to even like make money. And a lot of times the fields are really strong. And you don't advance anywhere from a mini tour event. You don't go into a mini tour event and think, oh, yeah, like, you know, if I do well here, I can really advance my career. Like, there's none of that.
It's just a quick cash grab for some people, you know? My one buddy who played mini tours in and around here in the Northeast told me once, he said, the only people that profit from mini tours are the people running the mini tours.
Yeah, exactly. The guy, I mean, I've heard, you know, something that, you know, one of the main mini tours down here, North Carolina, South Carolina, the guy who runs it does pretty well for himself. You know, it's just hard though, because, you know, you don't have sponsors, no one cares. Like, you know, it's just, and I appreciate these guys trying to put on like an event for us. But like for me, I just have a hard time really being like engaged and like caring for like a mini tour event. Like I really just don't, like I get there and I just honestly don't care. And like, I just do not give a shit. And it's hard to actually muster up. Like, it's just hard to really treat it like it's something that is really good, because it's not going to advance your career. It's not going to do anything for you. So,
right. There's really, aside from playing under pressure and, you know, trying to put your game up against someone else's, there's really no actual future benefit in your game.
No, it sucks. And honestly, like, and so this, so you're asking about daily life down here. You know, for me, I go out, I'm a little bit lazy. You know, I kind of get out there at like 12 or like one. I'll practice 30 minutes putting, 30 minutes chipping, hit balls for an hour and a half with on the TrackMan, and then go play from like 3 to 6 or 4 to 6 or 4 to 7 or, you know, whatever the daylight hours are. And just like, you know, you have the golf course is pretty empty after 3. So that's kind of why I don't like getting out there early. And the golf course is empty. You go play, hit loads of shots, drop more balls if you need to, work on stuff. And sometimes I find games, sometimes I don't. But yeah, I'm either trying to find a game with someone, or I'm just like, some guys are busy. I'm like, okay, I'm just gonna go play by myself. And it's great. The golf courses down here are pure. They're tough. I mean, they're kind of tough. And yeah, it's just, it's really good living down here. But back to like the mini tour, you know, thing we were talking about, you know, I feel like a lot of Americans like, and just kind of like when you grow up in America and you've lived here, like, you know, you just kind of think like it's Korn Ferry Tour or bust. You're just like, all right, like I'm either going to be on the Korn Ferry Tour, and I'm going to play mini tour events until Q school, or, you know, and that's it. Like, there's not this, you know, looking for, I wouldn't say it's American. It's just like, you know, like when you're in North America, you don't think about, oh, like I'm going to go play on the Asian tour, I'm going to play on the DP World Tour. Like, there's a lot of people making money, on tours you've never heard of and having a living, you know, playing in tournaments in India or Thailand or Phuket or, you know, other places in the world. And so for me, I'm kind of like, you know, I've done that before. Like I've done the mini tour thing throughout the summer and then waited till Q school, and then you miss Q school by 1 or 2 shots and like you're devastated. And it's like, wow, like, am I just gonna wait another year to like go play on the corn, you know, wait for Q school again and play mini tour events until then? Like, no, that sounds terrible.
Right.
And, like, that sounds horrible. And so this year I did DP World Tour Q school, and I was like right there on the number with like 9 holes to play and missed a few short putts coming in and missed it. And it was really disappointing. I played great all week. I was like 8th place with like 9 holes to go. But I was like, I'm not waiting around for another year till Q school comes around. I'm not playing mini tour events for another year. Like, I need to go play in something that could advance my career. So I went over to Italy and did a qualifier for the Alps Tour. Have you ever heard of the Alps Tour?
You know, I actually have, and I wanted to reference something that you said before. You know, it's funny because there are so many tours, and, you know, us as Americans, we're so North American centric.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. We're blinded to what else goes on in the rest of the world. And it's funny because the only time, especially like golfers or people in the golf media, even pick up on any of these guys is like you'll see the Masters invite list or the US Open. Yeah. Right. And they talk about this dude who's ranked 60th in the world. You're like, wait a minute, I've never heard of, because he plays in the Japan Tour, you know, or exactly. He plays over in, you know, in Korea or something like, or Australasian Tour or, you know, something like that. So it's wild the level of golf across the world, you know. But again, we have blinders here in the US, and it's like, yeah, it was always the PGA Tour or nothing. And now people, you know, talk about the LIV Tour a little bit. But even like the DP World Tour, the Euro Tour, is foreign to us Americans. I have one of my best friends is a caddy out there now. This is his first year caddying out on the DP World Tour.
Yeah.
And like, he was a Marine, so he traveled a ton. You know, just like you, a guy that's very cultured, very worldly, and sees what else is out there. And that's kind of something I really want to get your perspective on, because you do travel so much. You have traveled so much.
Yeah.
You know, what do you see outside the U.S. in terms of golf?
I think it's easier, first of all. I think, you know, going to Asia, I think going to Europe, I think it's a little bit easier. I think literally every year out of college come these studs who are, like, on the, you know, PGA Tour University or whatever. And these guys, right, like, if you're top 10 in college golf, you're ball striker. Like, you're that's like being top 50 on the Korn Ferry Tour. Like, that's really good.
Yeah, you're basically a pro already.
You're basically already a pro. Like, these guys who are top 10 in college golf, like, college golf, they play hard courses. So, like, when I mean hard courses, I mean ball striking courses. Like, courses you got to go out, drive it down the middle, and hit. And if you're not doing that, you're not going to shoot a good score. So these guys coming out of college, I mean, it's just such, like, a saturated market. Like, there's just so many pros, like, in America, every state open, like, every mini tour is just so packed. And, like, to think that you're going to be, like, top 45 at the end of the Q school process and pay $6,500 for Korn Ferry Tour Q school, I mean, it's doable, and it's good to have that belief in yourself, but you also need to have, like, backup options. And, like, for me, I grew up in a small town in Eastern Shore. You know, I was very small town there where I grew up. And I wanted to get out. I wanted to go see the world. And for me, going to these other tours is really key, like, because there's just more opportunities. It's easier. You know, like, in Europe, like, for example, all three of my teammates in college that were, like, I would consider, like, there was four of us who were really good. All three of them are on the DP World Tour, and I've been banging my head trying to get on the Korn Ferry Tour the last 7 years, and they've been banging their head trying to get on the DP World Tour, and they were on the Challenge Tour, which is a tour below that. Now they're on the DP World Tour, and I just don't think the DP World Tour, the Asian Tour, the Japan Tour, it doesn't draw the same crowd as the PGA Tour. Like, the PGA Tour draws, like, the elite of the elite who think they can come to America and, like, beat everyone.
Right.
And when you go to these other tours, it is easier. The competition isn't as hard. I mean, it's very hard still. Like, any tour you go to is difficult. Like, there's a tour in Thailand I played on in 2019 called the All Thailand Tour. And I played with this Thai guy who was, like, 5'7" and kicked my ass. And he shot 7 under. And I was like, there was, like, 25 guys under par for that week on a tough golf course. And I was like, man, like, it's everywhere. Like, there's literally good players everywhere. But yeah. I think going abroad and, like, even, like, in South Africa, there's a tour called the Sunshine Tour.
Yep.
In Korea, there's the Korean PGA Tour. There's the Japan Tour, which is a lot of money on that tour. There's the Asian Tour, which is literally about to get pumped full of Saudi Arabia money. There's, I think the Asian Tour is going to be a feeder into LIV. And yeah, like there's just so many other ways to actually like support yourself and like make a living in golf, like playing on the European tour, playing an Asian tour. Like there's so many guys you've never heard of that are like make $1 million a year and make $500,000 a year and travel and, you know, like get, you know, become more worldly and go to these cool places. And I think in America, it's very like I said earlier, it's Korn Ferry Tour bust. And everyone's trying to get on the Korn Ferry Tour. Like the whole world is trying to get on the Korn Ferry Tour. And it's just getting harder and harder. And not only that, it's getting more expensive. I mean, to enter into the Q School this year was $6,500. And I think when you, like I said, when you go abroad, there's so many small tours that like you've never heard of that if you do well on it, it's not like a mini tour event. You can actually advance your career. You can actually like, oh, if I win this week on the Alps Tour, I could get on the Challenge Tour. Or if I win on the ADT Tour, which is the Asian Development Tour, which is the tour below the Asian Tour. If I win on that tour, I can advance to the Asian Tour. And like, that's actually like worth playing in. Like that's worth going to Malaysia. It's worth going to Italy to like play in these events because you're getting somewhere. And when you're just playing mini tour events like all year long until Q School, you know, it's kind of, or doing Canada. I mean, most people just kind of here do Canada Q School and Korn Ferry Tour Q School. You know, it's just, for me, it's too discouraging to do that. Like it's too, just discouraging to sit around and wait for Korn Ferry Tour Q School. I want to get out there. I want to play on a tour that can advance me. And that's what I've done. So I went to Italy this past year and I qualified for the Alps Tour, which is a tour below the Challenge Tour. And if you play well on it, top five promote to the Challenge Tour. And then if you play well on the Challenge Tour, you promote to DP World Tour. And it's a really cool schedule. Next February, I'm going to Egypt for the first two events, which is like, and going to see the pyramids. Which is pretty baller. I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, it really is.
Like, you know, so. And
now,
like, go on.
I was going to say, a tour like that, is there the ability to support yourself? Like, is there enough money on a tour like that to support yourself? Or are you still seeing that as, you know, a stepping stone? Obviously, it's a stepping stone, but like while you're on it and you're overseas, is it enough to support that the travel and the airfare and this, that?
You definitely need. I personally believe that all professional golfers have someone helping them. You know, I think unless you're on the big tour or on I'd say like the five major tours, you know, Asian Tour, Live Tour, PGA Tour, Japan Tour, DP World Tour. Unless you're on one of those, you got to have some other form of income coming in. But like on the Alps Tour, you really, you need to pretty much dominate to like make some money. There's definitely not a lot of money on that tour by any means. But my point is like, you know, you could play in these mini tour events over here. You're still not supporting yourself and you're not getting anywhere.
Right. Like, right.
Getting anywhere. Like, you know, it's like, hey, if I'm going to like spend money and, you know, play in events with small purses, like at least if I play well, like, oh, like that could actually promote me to a tour where I do make money.
Yeah. And you're playing in some pretty cool areas of the world.
Oh dude, it's so cool, man. Like, I mean, this year I did Q School in Denmark. And just Denmark itself was the whole learning experience about Denmark. It's the way they've set up their society is totally different. You know, going to like after the Q School, my girlfriend and I, we rented a van and like van lifed around Norway for like 4 days. And like we're sleeping in a van, like in fjords and like the middle of freaking nowhere in Scandinavia. And, you know, you're like taking a shower. Like, I mean, my shower was basically jumping in a freezing cold lake. like, literally, you know, when you do that kind of stuff, you really feel like you're living. And when you play, like, you know, like, it's kind of like, I had a really disappointing finish in that Denmark Q school. Like, it was really heartbreaking. But I was like, hey, you know, I'm in Denmark. Like, that's pretty cool. Like,
yeah.
You know, when you go to, like, the G Pro event in Huntsville, North Carolina, and you MC, you're like, well, this sucks. And, you know, even if I play bad in those first two Alpstore events, I'm going to go see the pyramids. My girlfriend's going to come. We're going to go to Luxor, which is, like, ancient Egyptian civilization. Like, one of the capitals was right there in Luxor. It's like an hour flight south of Cairo. And
yeah, not to be confused with the one in Vegas, which most people listening to this will be like, oh yeah, I've been to Luxor. Like, I lost $50 there.
I told one of my friends that today. He's like, oh yeah, I've been to Luxor. Oh yeah, it's a hotel in Vegas or something. I was like, no, this is actually like this really famous place in Egypt too. But yeah, so gonna go check that out. And this year my schedule is super cool. There's I have 18 events in Europe. I have playing in the like Tunisia Open. I'm going to like Spain. I'm going to France, Austria. There's like 6 events in Italy. So I'm brushing up on my Italian.
How many countries have you been to so far?
I've been to 28.
Okay. And how many will this add to your list? How many new ones?
That's probably like 4 or 5 more. I've been to Italy and France and Spain, but I'm just so excited to, you know, it's such an adventure, you know, like when you hop on a plane, you got your suitcase, you're headed to Spain to play in some random golf tournament. You're like, let's go. You know, it's exciting. And
yeah, I mean I love travel. I there's for my money, like aside from golf, you know, travel is my most favorite thing in the world. And it's just you know, the ability to up and leave where you are and wake up in a totally different culture within a few hours' time, within that day. The span of that day is, I mean, it's really mind blowing when you think about it.
Yeah, exactly. It's awesome, man. It's literally so much fun to like, like, you know, there's a few events like June, July are going to be crazy for me. Like I'm going to be like Italy, Spain, France, like, you know, another place in Italy. And it's going to be so like adventurous. And like whenever you're like traveling, I read this book one time, it was called The Art of Making Memories. And this guy was talking about like, you know, the things that you really remember the most in your life are, you know, like new experiences, and great way to have new experiences is traveling. That's like, you know, you like there are days that I've traveled and I remember like everything I was doing that day because everything was so new. It was so different. It was so, you know, exotic. You're in this random area. Like I remember being in remote parts of China, just like looking around, like, where the hell am I? Like, what, you know, where do I eat today? Like, you know, like, what are these people saying? Like, you know, you're really plugged in. And I feel like when you're not traveling or when you're, you know, just kind of going through the motions, like I could spend, like, I love St. Simon's Island, but I could spend like a month down here and every day kind of seems the same, you know, like every day is like some variant of go to the course, go to the gym, you know.
Yeah, it's Groundhog's Day.
Yeah, exactly. Like every day is kind of the same. But like when you go to like Egypt or when I go to Egypt, I'm going to remember that day really well.
And yeah.
I'm gonna be like, yeah, this is what I was doing when I saw the freaking pyramids. And it's exciting. So, I mean, obviously I like that routine and that balance, but, you know, it's so cool to get other cultures, like perspectives on things and hear how other people do things in other parts of the world. Like in China, you know, they drink hot water. I mean, they think that hot water is like the cure for everything. Like if you get sick, just drink hot water. Like break your leg, like drink hot water. Like if you, you know, hurt yourself like some way, like you're depressed, like drink hot water. And it's just something in their culture.
Yeah.
So you know, it's it's super fun. Have you traveled? Like, where have you traveled to?
So, what's your experience? Our goal, my wife and I, is within the continental U.S. before we retire, and then we're going to go outside, the rest of the U.S. So we're on a mission. One of our big goals is to hit every national park.
Awesome.
So that's one of our big ones.
Which one have you been to?
Oh, have we been to?
Yeah.
It's easier to tell you which ones we haven't been to.
Okay.
Yeah, we haven't been to any of the five or six in Alaska, I believe. I think there's six. There's okay. one in Hawaii. I have. My wife has not. Where haven't we? Oh, we haven't been. Funny enough, for as many times as like I've been to Florida, we've never been to Everglades yet. We're doing Congaree this summer. Because we're going to be down in Bluffton, Beaufort area this summer. And then Acadia is the other big one that we haven't hit yet.
Okay.
So,
sounds like
but,
hit a few of them, though. Hit
yeah. You know, we've got our map in the den with all the pins all over it.
You got one of those maps?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I need and, to get one.
Yeah, everywhere we... Oh, yours would probably be just loaded on...
Well, surprisingly, I haven't been to a lot of national parks. Like, I haven't been to Yellowstone. I haven't really been to Alaska. I've been to that one place in Kauai where they, there's like the second biggest Grand Canyon or whatever. But I feel like I've traveled more outside of the U.S. than in the U.S. But one time, I don't know, like. But like in college golf, you have all these tournaments all over the place. I've been to probably 30 states, but, you're kind of doing an opposite of what my aunt did. My aunt worked for the State Department for like 30 years and went to 70 countries. And she, went to 70 countries before she retired, and now she's retired and she's just seeing like, all that the U.S. has to offer.
Oh, so, very cool. Very cool.
That's cool.
Yeah. Well, like a lot of our travel too now, like when we're doing it is, okay, there's a college campus nearby, right? Lai's getting old enough. So it's like, okay, we can hit two college campuses and a golf course. When you have the kids, you kind of mix and match it and trying to hit four birds with one stone, if you will.
Right.
But it was cool because.
Go on.
I was gonna say you mentioned Italy and it was cool because Lydon went to Italy last summer with some of the AP students. So he just loved it. And the first thing he said when he came back, and he's like, "Can we look into going to college overseas?" And I was like, "Yeah, I mean that's definitely an option that we can do." But now he's starting to see some colleges that do. Overseas semesters or a year abroad. So that's really piquing his interest as well. And mine as well, because I love learning about new cultures, new areas. So anytime he gives me a college, I'm diving into the locale, I'm diving into the, what's going on in that area and what they can provide. That's neat.
Dude, that's, I think he should totally do that because, that's one of the things I wish I did more of when I was younger, or went to college abroad, because that is like, that is a very memorable, awesome experience where, you're over there and there's a new language. There's, like you said, like a different culture. That's really cool. Like that's very exciting. I mean, like for me, one of the things that I really liked about, traveling to Italy and Spain and stuff is just how lazy people are. Like they don't have this, work culture that we Americans have. They're not like, you're hustling like every minute of the day, and being productive all the time, and you got to be doing something to like improve yourself every minute. Like in Spain, it's like, man, they take like a few hours siesta, drink, and don't give a shit.
Yeah, like sometimes it's cool to just chill. Like not everything needs to be like, mainland China, right? Or Japan, where that work culture is your whole life.
I know, exactly. Like I was listening to a guy who does this podcast, and he was talking about how he lived in Spain for 20 years and how he every time he went to a dinner party, no one talked about work. I was like, wow, that's like the first thing we Americans talk about. Like all, you know, we live. And so it's definitely interesting, like cultural perspectives on just things like that.
It's funny you mentioned that. I started like a sub-series of this podcast where every 2-3 episodes we do a course, and it's called My Course. And so, you know, someone comes on and they're like, hey, this is the course I want to talk about. And we really do like a deep dive of the course itself. Okay. And I send a questionnaire out to people, 15, 20 questions, base questions, you know, and then a lot of this kind of BS like you and I are doing.
Yeah.
And every single person so far says, you don't have a question about what I do for a living. I was like, because I don't give a damn.
Yeah.
Like, to you know, to me, people are people, right? Yeah. So whether you're, you know, considered by most the most important person in the world, or, you know, you're a dishwasher, like, that's irrelevant. Like, I'm looking right. for who the people are, not what your title is irrelevant to me. I don't care.
Exactly.
And if you care what my title is, then I probably don't want to get to know you that well anyway.
Right, exactly. Because then you're just some statusy, you know,
right.
fuck right. or whatever.
Yeah.
And like, you know, like, it's like you need to be, you got to be a little bit more grounded and into who people are and not, you know, so much with their title or their whatever, all that.
Yeah, it's like awesome. just be good people, you know, like.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting you say that, because like I really feel like it's hard to like divorce yourself from that, because like in society, like you're just you hear so many messages, kind of like everything in society is kind of telling you like you are what you do, you are what you make, you are what, you know, who you hang out with, your status and blah, blah, blah. But this guy was talking about how like, you know, in Spain, like, you know, it's kind of like more of a. Like, we don't care what you do for a living. Like, we're more interested in, like, what makes you interesting as a person. Like, you know, what kind of TV shows do you like? What kind of movies do you like? Like, do you read any interesting books? Like, do you like to go hiking? Like, do you like to, I don't know, you play an instrument? Like, what kind of music you like? Like, you know, what's things that make you interesting as, like, a person and not so much, like, what your status is or whatever. Because even, like, for me, like, if I go out, like, you know, to, like, I don't know, like, with some friends or with my girlfriend's friends, like, you know, I'm like, yeah, I play golf. And they're like, oh, like, what's that? You know, like, or how does that work? You know, and I'm like, well, you know, it's a long story. Let's talk
about that. Well, that's funny, because that's the same thing I tell people. Or something.
Go on.
I said, I tell people the same thing. What do you do? I was like, well, I play golf. It's one of the things I do, you know? And like, oh no, what do you do for a living? I'm like, oh, well, I'm a teacher. And like, oh, how is that? I'm like, well, I don't want to talk about that. Like, let's talk about golf.
Yeah, exactly. See, for me, it's the opposite. I'm like, oh, I want to talk about something else besides golf. Like, I just
and that's why I love having you on, because you're so into travel. I know you're so into reading and stuff. And so it's an awesome perspective that I get from you that I don't get from other pro golfers. And honestly, like, this is going on year 4 of this podcast, and no word of a lie, like, I'm sick of talking to pro golfers, because they are vanilla. They're boring. Like, my one buddy sent, hey man, he's like, I can get so-and-so on your podcast. I'm like, you know what? That would probably be an awesome get. Like, other people would probably love it. Probably get a lot of interaction on Instagram.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I'm reading about this dude, and I'm like, I'm going to just talk golf with him. Like, I've done enough talking about golf, you know, let's talk about cool shit.
Yeah. Talk about some cool shit or whatever. Yeah, exactly. But like, so many, like, you know, so many guys get so wrapped up in, like, you know, golf is their identity, and I'm on this mission to, like, get on the PGA Tour, and it, like, it just consumes them to where they don't have anything else interesting to talk about except maybe, like, their college football team.
Yeah, there's no substance
there's not a lot of substance, and I do feel that, like, at the island, and, like, you know, where I, you know, particularly, like, you know, it's funny, so... Like, I've always felt like, you know, pro golfers, and particularly like American pro golfers, can be very standoffish, like very kind of like, you know, like, you know, if you're nice to them, it's kind of like, why are you being nice to me? You know, it's like this kind of
competitive. Yeah, what do you want from me?
Yeah, what do you want from me? It's kind of this like competitive, like distrustful, like, you know, why are you talking to me? You know, and it's hard for me to like really like relate to that because I don't know, like I feel like I'm not that competitive. I feel like I want to do well, but I'm not trying to like smush you or like, you know, be like, oh, I'm better than you or whatever. And it's funny. So when I was in Italy, I was playing this qualifier at Sakaya Resort Golf Club, and it's literally like middle of nowhere, Puglia, like on the boot heel of Italy. And I get done the round, and this like European guy comes up to me, and he's like, "Hey," I'm sitting down having pasta, like this vegan pasta, and he's like, "Hey, like, what's going on, man? How you doing? Like, can I join you?" And it's like this French guy, and I was like, and like me as an American, I'm like, are you gay or something? Like, you know, like, what do you want? Like, I was like, what do you want from me? Why are you being this nice to me?
Yeah, it's like the guard goes up automatically here around
instantly.
You.
Like, I was instantly like distrustful of this guy. Like, what does he want from me? And then he was just a nice guy who was like 24, 25, and he just wanted to sit down and talk. And he was like, where are you from? And I was like, and then like I had another experience like that where I played golf with these other guys. And there's two guys from South Africa, another guy from like Montpellier, France. And this guy, we played a practice round, and then they were like, hey, like, you know, you want to come by and like, you know, have dinner or whatever. And I was like, man, this would never happen like in America. Like, you know, these people are way like, I mean, at least, like from my competitive experience with being in the States, like it's a very distrustful kind of air between other golfers. Everyone's kind of like, you know, minding their own business. But like, I got a very warm vibe being in Europe and especially Italy. And yeah, like these guys were like, yeah, like, do you want to have some food or do you want to hang out? And I was like, man, I've played golf literally like all over Canada, all over South America, like with, you know, on these American run tours, never like had like people be like, hey, like, you know, like, what's up, can I, you know, whatever, join you for dinner and just, and yeah, just chat about nothing. And I was like, man, this is like really a cool cultural experience right now, because you know, I do feel like one of the things I would say like from my travels is I would say America is very concerned, it's ultra competitive. It's like hyper competitive country, and people are always trying to get ahead and like do better than you and trying to best you in some way and kind of see you as potentially maybe their rival. And I'd say like in Europe, they have a much healthier relationship to like competition and like being competitive. It's like, okay, like we're competitive on the course, but like, you know, outside that, like, you know, we're all like buddies.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's kind of how it should be. So
I like that. I like that perspective a lot. And you always bring that too. I mean, you bring a very worldly perspective to the game, which I think is needed a lot. So I am very cognizant of your time. I know you've been out, you know, all day long. We're going past an hour now, which we did last time too. And it's awesome. I love it. But I think like, if you're cool with it, I would love when you're back in the States, once this season's over, for you to kind of, you know, give a review of not only the golf, like, yeah, the golf's cool and stuff, but kind of the off the course happenings while you're out playing in all these, you know, for most of us, wild flung places.
Exotic places. Or
yeah.
Yeah. you know, I definitely could do that. I'm really looking forward to, like, you know, my Instagram, follow me, official Chris Hickman. I always post like these
awesome pictures. That's what you always post. They're
I always find the best picture and post it.
Yeah, I a lot of times, like that whole last trip that you did through Rome and everything, like I was just living vicariously through that. And I'm like, man, my dude's killing
have
it.
Have you been
there.
To Rome?
No, my son was. He was there. He went to the Vatican and stuff. So it was cool to see all his pictures and then to see, you know, yours as well. And he follows you too. And he's like, oh man, like I was there, Dad, you know, and it's neat, you know. It's just it's a big world, but it's still very small, you know?
Yeah. That's awesome, man. If you ever get a chance, you need to get over there because the Colosseum and the Vatican is like it's on another level. Like I you know, I told my girlfriend, I was like, oh, you know, I don't really know if I'm really crazy about seeing Italy. Like it seems nice, but it's so touristy. Like, no, it's awesome. Like Italy is freaking amazing. It lives up to its like the Colosseum is massive and it's also kind of like amazing in like a gruesome way. Like you're like, wow, this was really like used for some messed up stuff that like these Romans did to their, you know, captives or slaves or whatever. And just like the Vatican and it, Italy's really like mountainous. Like there's mountains everywhere and it's very hilly and the coasts are beautiful, like the Mediterranean. Like I got 6 events there this year and you know, I'm not complaining about it. So
awesome. So we'll definitely check back in during that time.
For sure.
You know, follow Chris on Instagram. We'll put all the information in the liner notes and tag him when the episode drops and all that stuff. Everyone knows what we do here. Chris, again, dude, I can't thank you enough. It's always an enlightening and just a great talk having you on, man.
Dude, I appreciate it. Always great talking to you too, man. So
all right, people. So either get busy golfing or get busy dying.